take everything I believe, mix it with what I've achieved, and take a look at what's left for me.
And good evening, everyone. This is DJ Sam I Am for another hour of all the sports topics that you need to know here at the Power Hour. Hope everyone had a tremendous week. This past week, just a little reminder, I was in Dixie State in St. George's, Utah, and we also had a game in Phoenix, Arizona. We were gone for about 4 days. That's why I wasn't here last week. But I'm here this week, and I will make up those shows in the upcoming weeks, so don't worry about that. You'll get plenty of the Power Hour here at radio.dominican.edu. So just a recap of how the men's soccer team did when we went out to Dixie State. It was unfortunate that we lost. We lost in the second overtime, 1-0. We played a really hard-fought game. Dixie State was in first place. They had not lost in conference play, and we battled till the end. We had plenty of opportunities to score throughout the game. We pretty much dominated the run of play, and it was just unfortunate that they got a decent goal in the second overtime to come away with a 1-0 win. We were in a very hostile environment. The coaches said that they were very proud of us. We played very hard. Unfortunately, we couldn't come up with the result. Then we flew down to Arizona and played Grand Canyon University. So in this game, we were missing three of our starters on our starting lineup, and since we only brought 18 members of the team to Utah and Arizona, we were only down to 15 players during the game. It was a night game. We played at 8 p.m. there under the lights at Grand Canyon. The weather was beautiful. The field looked great. Unfortunately, we didn't show up with a result. We lost 3-0. We did have our chances in the second half to come back to make the game interesting. Had plenty of chances to even tie the game. We just could not put it in, unfortunately. We tried our hardest. So even though we came away with 0 wins this past road trip, we still came away with a lot. And you can tell the team has grown, knowing that we are very young. We have so many freshmen on the starting lineup. So it's good that they're getting all this opportunity to play games, play away games in hostile environments like we did in Utah, and they're getting a lot of experience out there, and you can tell the team's getting a lot better as we progress through the season. We came back this Saturday and we played Academy of Art. We unfortunately lost that game also. We're on a little bit of a losing streak here. We ended up on losing that game 6-4. It was a rough game. Don't really want to talk about that one. I will let you know that the goals scored were by Robin Goldschmidt, Corey Vanderpool, Andrew Vu, and Nuri Bonacosta. Those were the goal scorers. Just a little heads up, we play our next game in my hometown, Belmont, California. We play Notre Dame, Dana Muir, our big Battle of the Bay rivals. Game time kickoff is at 3:30 at Notre Dame. So a little quick recap of today's segment here at the Power Hour. You're listening to DJ Sam I Am at radio.dominican.edu. On today's show, we'll just get, of course, we'll start in our Bay Area topic. We'll talk about the 49ers and their recap win against the Detroit Lions, who were undefeated and no longer are because of our SF Niners. I will give you a recap of the game and my opinion on what happened after the game. If you didn't see it already, stay tuned. We'll get into that later. Then later in the show, I think it'll be appropriate to bring up the death of the IndyCar racer Dan Weldon. He was killed in a 15-car crash accident this weekend. I'll get into it a lot later. After that, I'll bring back up the mood and end on a little more happier note here. I'll talk to you about a man winning 15 straight football games betting, and he wins $100,000, and Andy Reid getting jabbed in the belly, if you guys didn't see that in the Philadelphia's game yesterday. And I also will get back to you, the Bay Area with Jason Campbell and the quarterback situation for the Oakland Raiders. So stay tuned, please, here at the Power Hour with DJ Sam I Am at radio.dominican.edu.
To all the bars. catch a thing. You think I haven't heard that line before? Thinking you're so clever, I find you a mower. I hear you using big words, trying to be so deep. All the while I'm I'll bide my time till Mr. Right comes along. Shit, I only see the symbol in the Mr. Wrong. Well, don't you know the good ones are all married or gay? Have to keep an eye out.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Power Hour here at radio.dominican.edu. You are in the studio with DJ Sam I Am. It is Monday night, 8:10 p.m. So now before I get into the the Niners game and what happened after the game between the coaches. Now, I'm sure all of you want to know about that. But first, I'll give a little recap of what happened in the game. The Niners went into a very, very hostile crowd in Detroit. I mean, that place must have been absolutely jumping. I mean, the Detroit place is in a dome, and I must say that it was probably the loudest that I've ever heard it. And I wasn't even there. I was outside. I was watching it on TV. So I mean, the fans were there, ready to rock. The Niners came in and shut them up beautifully. Basically, they finished the game perfectly strong. They won 25-19. Now the Lions coming into this game were the talk of the league. Them being 0-16 2 years ago. Now they were 5-0 coming into the game, and the only unbeaten team along with the Green Bay Packers. So they were the talk of the league. Everyone was saying, ooh, Green Bay Packers this, Detroit Lions that. These are the two top NFC teams in the NFL. But, I mean, I think it's time to start talking about the Niners being the story of the league here. Like, they're 5-1. No one even thought that they'd even come close to being 5-1. They have proved a lot throughout this season already, and I feel like they're just going to keep improving and keep showing the league that, hey, some people need to show them a little love. Because, I mean, I never see any type of coverage of the Niners on ESPN, ever. I mean, after the game, when they scored 48 points and they won 48-3 against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I mean, after that game, I looked on ESPN and I did not see one highlight of the Niners. I could not find one. I mean, all they kept talking about were the East Coast teams. That's all they ever worry about on ESPN. I mean, it's the Patriots, the Jets, the East Coast teams, the Miami Dolphins. What are all they doing? I mean, like, it really gets me frustrated, because the Niners, I mean, need to get some publicity here. I mean, they've been doing so well with a brand new coach. I mean, I mean Jim Harbaugh's done an amazing job. I don't know why he isn't getting credit for anything. It's beyond me. I mean, it just feels good that now that they're beating worthy opponents, so now that they could have some credibility to say, hey, we should get some publicity. We need to start talking about us as being a potential threat in the playoffs. Now, the highlight of the game, Alex Smith's fourth down, 6-yard pass to Delanie Walker, gave San Francisco the go-ahead touchdown with 1:51 left. It lifted the 49ers to a 25-19 victory win. And, of course, the play stood after a video review. Of course, they review all the plays now that are touchdowns. Detroit did have a chance to drive for a tying field goal or even a go-ahead touchdown, but couldn't get a first down against a great defense, again, by the San Francisco 49ers. I mean, they held a very explosive Jahvid Best to only 12 carries for only 37 yards. And Jahvid Best had a really good game the other day, and the Niners just swarmed him, of course, like they always do with Patrick Willis in the middle. David Akers gave San Francisco a 6-point lead with 1:02 to left, and lifted the Niners to a 5-1 record. Now the Lions and the San Francisco 49ers are both 5-1, and the San Francisco's coach Jim Harbaugh and Detroit's coach Jim Schwartz did have to be separated after the game. Before I get to that, I'll give a little quick stat run on how the Niners did. Alex Smith went 17 for 32 for 125 yards and one touchdown. Frank Gore had 15 carries, 141 yards with one touchdown, and had a 9.4 yard per average. And Michael Crabtree had a huge game with 9 receptions for 77 yards. So now, to the moment you've all been waiting for, the fight between the coaches that happened at the end of the game. I'll first start with Jim Harbaugh and why I have a problem with it. I mean, I get why you're fired up. I mean, you beat a great team in the Detroit Lions. They have a potent offense with Calvin Johnson, Jahvid Best. I mean, and their defense, their front seven is one of the best in the league. Their front four is one of the best in the league with that beast of a boy, of a man, shouldn't even call him a boy, of a man, and Ndamukong Suh. I I get why you're fired up, but you're trying to build something great when your guys, it's not the Super Bowl. What I'm trying to say is it's fabulous. You went into the Detroit's house. You're away and you beat them by a TKO at the last seconds of the game. I mean, I bet you felt awesome, but really, man, like, it's not the Super Bowl. You've won big games, both as a player and as a coach. I think you need to start acting like it. I mean, I get this is an emotional guy, and like that's what the players feed off of, and that's good. I'm not trying to diss that, but you can't get all physical with an angry losing coach like what Jim Schwartz was, and he was ticked off after the game. I mean, what Jim Harbaugh did, he knew what he was doing. Jim Schwartz was ticked off after the game. He came running up and gave him a good size little jab in the spine there. Like, I mean, seriously, you might as well just go up to him and give him a little chest bump or something. Like, you should have just motored down, shake the man's hand, and just get it over with. Don't start a riot, because he definitely started something that was way too much talked about on SportsCenter after. It's just not fun to talk about. And as for Jim Schwartz, although he didn't provoke the fight or didn't start it, but he sure as hell wanted to finish it, didn't he? I mean, he just started sprinting to Jim Harbaugh. I mean, he looked extremely pissed. And I mean, he is an extremely competitive and proud guy. I'm sure he felt Harbaugh disrespected him and kind of showed him up in his own home. But like, seriously, it really doesn't matter. Be the bigger man. Say, screw off, man. I don't really care. You learn how to win. No, you know how to be there. Like, he should have just bite the bullet. Don't do anything. He really just looked like a little kid having a little baby tantrum attack. I've seen my brother put on a little better of a tantrum attack than him. It was just funny, because I don't see his players looking at that being, that's a good type of pumping up. I mean, he was basically just freaking out like he broke a nail or stubbed his toe and running around getting in Jim Harbaugh's face. I mean, it was funny. It's just a funny situation. I thought I'd bring it up. It just blew my mind that Jim Schwartz was acting that much of a little girl. Jim Harbaugh, just take it easy, man. You know how to win. You've been there before. Win like a champ. So before we go on, we'll take a quick short little break. But when we get back, I'll talk about the Oakland Raiders and their game against the Cleveland Browns yesterday and what happened in that game to their quarterback, Jason Campbell. Don't go anywhere. This is the Power Hour with DJ Sam I Am here at radio.dominican.edu.
That is like, please understand that I'm
Welcome back to the Power Hour with DJ Sam. I am here at radio.dominican.edu. For those of you who cannot catch the Monday night game that is currently on, I'll give you a little recap of what's happening at the moment. It is currently in the fourth quarter, 3 minutes, 21 seconds left. The Jets have the ball. They are leading 24-6. At the moment, they're on the New York Jets, 42, and it is currently 2nd and 7. The New York Jets are basically dominating the Miami Dolphins. Matt Moore for the Dolphins, the quarterback, is 14 for 29 for 187 yards and 2 interceptions with no touchdowns. Reggie Bush had 10 carries for 71 yards. And Brandon Marshall had 6 receptions for 109 yards. Pretty big night for Brandon Marshall. On the Jets side, Mark Sanchez went 14 for 25, 201 yards with 1 touchdown. And Sean Green had 21 carries for 74 yards. And the leading receiver for the Jets was Santonio Holmes with 3 receptions, 63 yards, and 1 touchdown. Now, I lied to you. I'm not going to get into the Oakland Raiders quarterback situation yet. I'd first like to get into the horrific incident that happened this weekend about the crash that happened and the death of Dan Weldon. You can't really help but be sick over the death. He's a 2-time Indy 500 winner and a 2005 series champ. Dan Weldon, I mean, words can't do it justice. I mean, 1 minute you're watching one of the most respected and admired guys in his sport. He's a multi champion. 1 minute you're just seeing him and the next he's just gone, leaving behind a wife, 2 young children also. And I mean, it was terrifying and it was just a sickening wreck to see also. It was a 15 car crash. Wade Cunningham and J.R. Hildebrand also collided, setting off a chain reaction that included a total of 15 cars, including Weldon's, which went airborne before slamming into the fence and catching on fire. Now, on the topic, I mean, horrific wrecks happen, and these guys know the risks when they get into the car, but there was something fishy about this, and The question to be asked here is, could that wreck have been prevented? Could that wreck have been prevented? And were they not asking for trouble, the NASCAR, when they were throwing 34 cars onto a track that it was the most ever on an IndyCar track outside of Indianapolis, which is the biggest one. It's the most cars on one track, 34 going at a million miles an hour on this track. I mean, it was too flat, too smooth, and too fat and too fast. Will Power, who was a part of the accident, NASCAR driver, said Friday before the race, quote, "This oval racing, when you are flat out 100%, it is kind of ridiculous," end quote. And guys were going flat out. It was the final race of the season. These guys were just flying, trying to win the cup, and it was basically life or death, literally. Unfortunately, it was literally life or death for Dan Weldon. I mean, Weldon was battling for a $5 million promotional bonus. You don't think he's going to go hard on that one turn? It's just unfortunate because everyone knew going in. You could see from lap two, people were driving nuts. That's what one NASCAR driver had to say. You in a race like that, with so much on the line, it really is inevitable that a big crash will happen. And it's unfortunate because, like, a guy like me and a fan of sports, but who doesn't really appreciate the NASCAR mentality and what it brings to the sports, I don't really know of it. So it's just a shame that I kind of watch it just for the crashes. And I know a lot of my friends do too. I mean, that's really the only reason why I would watch it on SportsCenter. Once NASCAR comes up, I'm looking for a big time wreck. And it's sad that this big time wreck led to a death. And I think the NASCAR definitely needs to look at that and look into how many people they have on the track, how the tracks are laid out, and the safety of these drivers. So I'd like to send my prayers to Dan Weldon's family. And I hope all is well. So we'll get back to the Power Hour after this short break, and we'll get into the Oakland quarterback drama now that Jason Campbell is out. So stay tuned to the Power Hour with DJ Sam I Am at radio.dominican.edu. This is breaking news at the bottom of the hour. At least 435 patients, mostly children, have died this year from encephalitis in one of India's most impoverished regions, health officials said. Most of the deaths happened between August and September, according to K.P. Kushwaha, chief pediatrician at BRD Medical College in Nehru Hospital in Uttar Pradesh State's Gorakhpur district. Some 30 to 35 people are being diagnosed daily with the infection in Gorakhpur, he said. The outbreaks are common in the district near India's border with Nepal. Encephalitis is an inflammation of the brain, primarily caused by food and drink contamination and mosquito bites. The very young and the elderly are more likely to have a severe case, according to the U.S. National Library of Medicine. As many as 500 people died last year in the region from the disease, Kushwaha said. In 2009, India reported 774 fatalities from encephalitis, including 556 in Uttar Pradesh.
Now you are like all those before you, a vision just beyond my reach, a ghost and habit in my dreams, a vision just beyond my reach. How do you talk to the person whose ghost has haunted you, haunted you for so long? How do you talk to the person whose ghost has haunted you? And how do you tell the difference between the two?
And welcome back to the Power Hour with DJ Sam AM at the one and only radio.dominican.edu. So now just keeping along with the trend of bad news after the, of course, the death of Dan Weldon and the poor children with encephalitis, we will get to the Oakland Raiders. Now, there is a little dash of good news, but it is a little dash of good news surrounded and engulfed with a lot of bad news and bad times to come for the Oakland Raiders, unfortunately. Now, the good news first, because everyone loves good news. We'll give it first. They did win and beat the Cleveland Browns 24-17. Yippee. They beat a poor Cleveland Browns team. They're not really that good. But, I mean, you're supposed to beat the teams that are weaker than you, and they did so accordingly. Jacoby Ford returned a kickoff 101 yards. Now, Jacoby Ford, that guy can fly. He booked it for that touchdown. And Kevin Boss also caught a 35-yard touchdown pass on a fake field goal. And it led the Oakland Raiders to the victory. And it was this Sunday was, in fact, the first home game since the death of owner Al Davis. So it was a very emotional day. There were a lot of old-time Raiders coming back to honor Al Davis. So it was a good night. It was a good day, and it was a good day for the Oakland Raiders to win that game. It was good to honor Al Davis. I mean, he was the man who had been the face of the franchise, I mean, for nearly a half century before dying, of course, of an undisclosed illness at the age of 82. Really, in my opinion, the best moment came during that halftime ceremony when dozens of former players standing in a circle around the Raiders emblem at midfield, the Super Bowl winning coach John Madden lit a cauldron on the plaza level in the corner of the stadium also. So it was a nice little gesture toward Al Davis. And on all this day full of tributes, the Davis would have appreciated the Oakland Raiders beating the Cleveland Browns. Now, of course, that is the small little bit of a bigger story that happened in the game and the bad news that's about to come to the poor Oakland Raiders. It is that they will be missing their quarterback for a very, 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 very long time. Not that long, but I mean, he is to have surgery on his broken collarbone. Kyle Bowler is prepared to take over as the starting quarterback in Oakland. And, that's for now though, because Hugh Jackson is searching for another quarterback as soon as Jason Campbell went down. Basically what happened was Jason Campbell scrambled around and he dove, and basically what he did was he kind of separated his arm from his rib cage, and as he reached forward, he just rolled over and fell right on his shoulder, and you can tell it just popped right out, broke his collarbone, probably tore all those ligaments in there. After the game, immediately Hugh Jackson, the coach, has this to say, quote, "If you're a quarterback out there and you want to come play for the Raiders, give us a call. The whole world know that we need a quarterback. Jason Campbell, Kyle Bowler is not the solution for Jason Campbell. The Raiders have lost Campbell for a significant period of time. Campbell hopes to recover in time to play down the stretch for the Raiders. He says that he's going to be positive, and if everything goes right, he could be back in 6 weeks. Which hopefully that's for the Raiders' best interest, because he's been playing very well. The Raiders have looked into possible trades and free agent signings. Although one possible quarterback that they could have gone for, and I think that was probably their top prospect to get, was David Garrard. And today, his agent contacted a Fox Sports report that the quarterback will need back surgery and would not be available for 4 to 6 weeks. So he's a no-go. That's off their list. Other free agent possibilities could include Trent Edwards, who was in Oakland's camp this summer. They got to look at him. They might like him still to bring him back. He's a Bay Area native from Stanford. You have Charlie Fry, who, of course, spent the past two seasons with the Raiders, and former Baltimore quarterbacks Troy Smith and Todd Bowman, who have worked with Hugh Jackson, the Raiders' current coach, with the Ravens. Now, those are all possible free agents that they could get. I like all of them. What I like to see, a good fit that I would like, would be Troy Smith. And this is just free agents. This isn't trades that I'm talking about. Troy Smith, I would love. I liked him when he was on the Niners. He gives you a versatile option with the deep threat. And I know the Raiders love to throw deep. And he also can, he's a very mobile quarterback. I'm sure they love to have a mobile quarterback. Now, also, Oakland is looking into making a trade for Cincinnati's Carson Palmer or even Denver's Kyle Orton. Now, the Tuesday, tomorrow, is the deadline for trades. So if anything goes down, they need to start making some calls. If they haven't already, I'm sure they have. I don't really see the Carson Palmer going through. Cincinnati seems pretty ticked off, pretty pissed off at Carson Palmer. I don't see him being traded at all. I see him staying right where he is. And Kyle Orton is a very interesting choice because there has been a lot of talk about getting rid of Kyle Orton and having Tim Tebow's time to rise to shine is his turn right now. So I think Kyle Orton would be an interesting choice for the Raiders. Hugh Jackson also had this after the game to say. He said, quote, "You just kind of rattle all the trees and see everything that's out there, what best fits us. You got to have somebody that can kind of hit the ground running, whether the guy you can be a starter or the guy can be a backup, because if not, it's going to take 2 or 3 weeks or 4 to get ingrained in the system and you've fallen behind," end quote. So Hugh Jackson is looking for a solution to the problem, and that's good. That's good to see for the Oakland Raiders. They're not just sticking with Kyle Bowler and Terrell Pryor and saying, yep, we'll just roll the dice and see how we do with this guy. They're looking around, making phone calls, picking and choosing, seeing what the best fit for that organization is. And it's good to try to see that organization take it to the next level. And I think that's what they love to see out of Hugh Jackson. Now, the injury spoiled, like I said before, how good of a season Jason Campbell had. I mean, after bouncing between coordinators for most of his career, he finally got a chance to play his second year in Hugh Jackson's offense. He was finally getting to feel comfortable, and his numbers were showing it. He completed 60.6% of his passes for 1,170 yards for 6 touchdowns and only 4 interceptions. I mean, those are impressive numbers, and for a passer rating of 84.2. That could be higher, but regardless, those are really good numbers for Jason Campbell. I mean, what Hugh Jackson said was, it's really tough because the guy works so hard in the off season, preparing himself and spending so much time with his teammates. It hurts to see someone who spent so much time and who you've seen who has been good, because Jason Campbell had some moments when he was on the Washington Redskins and when he was at Auburn that he was going to be a very, very talented quarterback in the NFL. He has had his ups and downs this year, and it's just unfortunate to see him as he's going up and up and getting better. It's just unfortunate to see for him to get injured as the Oakland are really making a chance to win the AFC West. They're making a strong push to challenge the San Diego Chargers. Hugh Jackson also had this to say after the game, quote, "But that's the nature of this game. I think the players, when they play it, they understand that. None of us like it. I don't like it, but we're not going to worry about that. The team is going to win," end quote. He is determined to make this team win. He's going to put that behind him. Even though he loves Jason Campbell, he's going to put that behind him, and they're going to move forward. Now, there is a very good chance that they're going to have to deal with Kyle Bowler under center. They play the Kansas City Chiefs, which is lucky for them because the Kansas City Chiefs are not strong at all. But without a quarterback, it could be a very tough game for them. Bowler was a first-round pick by Baltimore in 2003, but he has not started a game in the NFL since 2009 when he was with St. Louis. He has spent the past 2 years as a backup in Oakland, completing 10 of 18 passes for 125 yards and one interception. That was in Sunday's game after Campbell got injured. Bowler started 34 games over his first three seasons with the Ravens, but really has just been mostly a backup in the past 6 years that he's been in the league. Now, you might be wondering, well, what does Hugh Jackson have to say? All he's really talking about is we need a new one. We need a new person. He did say that I feel good about Kyle, and that's why he's here. I know Kyle, and I know what Kyle is and what he's capable of doing, but we're chasing a championship here. That's the commitment I've made to the organization, and I got to make sure that we're putting championship players out there. Not to say that Kyle's not. I got to make sure that there's not somebody out there who can come best fit us that may give us an opportunity. So Hugh Jackson is taking every right step in getting this organization to back to its winning ways, because Oakland Raiders were a very feared organization. And that's what Hugh Jackson is trying to bring again to the table for the Oakland Raiders, because in the past, they have not really done well at all. It looks like he's going to get the bulk of the work for the first team this week in practice, which will be better for him because he looked pretty sloppy coming in to the game at halftime or around there. That's very understandable because he probably didn't get much reps with the first team. He came in cold, probably in the heat of the game. You know, that place was rocking because it was at the anniversary of Al Davis. So he was, that's understandable. Now he's going to get some practice with the team this week, which the Raiders hope that it'll improve his play Sunday against the Chiefs. Bowler, what does Bowler have to say about all this? He says, quote, "It's unfortunate that it happened, but now it's my responsibility to take over and to lead this offense to scoring points. I'm excited about that because I feel like I can step in there. I feel like I have a good relationship with the offensive line, receivers, and the running backs. So I'm looking forward to this week to be able to get practice reps with them and get after this thing," end quote. So it'll be an interesting thing to look at and to see what the Oakland Raiders do before this deadline tomorrow and how they handle their quarterback situation with Jason Campbell now out. Well, we will take a quick break right now. When we get back, we will get into an unidentified bettor in Delaware who had a $5 parlay wager and won $100,000. I'll let you know how he did that and a little humorous Andy Reid jab to the stomach. If you guys didn't catch that, I'll talk about that later. Don't go anywhere. This is the Power Hour with DJ Sam I Am here at radio.dominican.edu.
And victims of change, liars don't rearrange. Wait, wait, wait.
Ed. And you are back in the Power Hour here with DJ Sam I Am at radio.dominican.edu. So, little last bit stories that I stumbled upon on the internet. So, an unidentified bettor this weekend in Delaware correctly picked the outcome of 15. Now, don't let me... Let me repeat this. So you 15 straight NFL games to win. That's basically all the games to win $100,000 on a $5 parlay wager. The odds of winning the bet are 32,000 to 1, since it requires the bettor to correctly predict 15 NFL games against the spread. 32,000 to 1. The winning ticket was handed in at Delaware Park a week ago, and it included 13 wins in Week 5, plus correct picks of the Philadelphia Eagles and the Baltimore Ravens. Now, Delaware legalized sports betting in 2009, allowing only parlay wagers on NFL games. That's the only betting that they allowed in Delaware. Since introducing the 15-team $100,000 jackpot, no bettor had managed to take down the pot. So he was the very first one to do it. Congrats to him. Unfortunately, he didn't want to be identified. According to the report, $370,000 had been wagered since 2009 by bettors looking to turn $5 into $100,000, with nearly 74,000 losing bets made before a winner finally came through. It's pretty amazing stuff. A parlay wager requires a bettor to correctly predict at least 3 games against the spread at odds of 6.5 to 1. Unbelievable. I mean, I would love to just take him to Vegas right after that, because that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm taking his butt right to Vegas because he looks like the luckiest son of a gun that I've seen. 32,000 to 1, the odds. Yeah. Get me that plane ticket down there. So, and then lastly, before we run out of time, during the Eagles game this week, it was a very, very funny incident with LeSean McCoy and their coach, Andy Reid. LeSean McCoy just ran for a first down that clinched the season saving for the Dream Team Eagles in the Week 6 victory. And what does he do? He decides to give his coach, and all the euphoria of him winning the game, clinching the game, really, he gives him a nice little jab, a quick jab like a Muhammad Ali right to the gut. And you know Andy Reid, he isn't the most fit person in the world, as I may say. So it was a very funny thing that happened. Andy Reid's face was absolutely priceless. His reaction when he got hit, his face was really funny. You need to see the video on YouTube. He gets a lot of criticism about his in-game strategy around the league, and maybe the coaches that he hires. In the past, he's been very known to have questionable coaches that he hires, and the league kind of and the public kind of bash on him a little bit. And of course, about all of his regular season success and how they haven't really brought any Super Bowl victories. But even with his team and a 1-4 start, and this is the last thing I'm going to say on this, I want to give Andy Reid some props, because there wasn't a whiff of conflict in that Eagles locker room that it seemed like during that game. He was laughing. The team was laughing. Everyone seemed to have great camaraderie around the bench and throughout all the players. So it just seemed like, even though that they were 1-4 and that they had the sky-high expectations, He's really brought this team to become a unit and to get through this together, and that's the way they're going to do it. So hopefully we will see the Eagles do well later in the year, because I like Andy Reid and I like what he does for the NFL. So that does it for this Power Hour here at radio.dominican.edu. You're with DJ Sam I Am. That's me, and I had a lot of fun tonight. I will be here next week, so stay tuned next Monday at 8 o'clock for another segment of the Power Hour here with DJ Sam I Am. Again, radio.dominican.edu. www.ucla.edu. See you next week. Yeah, that's how